everything in between. This is Brewers Weekly. Here's Dominic Catronio.
Hello, hello, hello. What a fun first week of baseball, huh? Only one loss for the Brewers so far on the young season. A solid 4-1 record. I'm Dominic Catronio. Hey, it's about to get real, real fast. And I'm going to explain why here in the show. A lot to figure out with the pitching staff specifically. We'll get into maybe a six-man rotation. Thoughts on that coming up here in the program. We're going to play a little game in a few segments where it's going to be just, is this sustainable? You know, it's just kind of the yes or no question where I'm going to go through five topics of each, the offense and the pitching staff. Is this sustainable? Then I want to talk a little bit about Bryce Terang and the start that he's off to. Somebody had asked me over the weekend which of the quote-unquote sophomores or second-year young players is going to be most important to this team. And I said Bryce Terang, and today I want to explain a little more in depth why and why this first week is certainly a great sign from what we've seen from that. Also going to talk a little bit about what's coming up this week with the Seattle Mariners in town, and then they finally get some Central Division opponents next week, taking on the Cincinnati Reds, and then maybe a reunion next week with Corbin Burns in Baltimore. As we begin the show today, though, I'll remind you, 855-616-1620 if you want to join the program. Again, that is 855-616-1620. If you want to join us, you can call in, you can text in. We can love to hear your thoughts, especially during the Is This Sustainable portion of the program. But right now, I want to shift gears and relive these two home games with some of the highlights you heard here on WTMJ. And on the home opener, we all have the pomp and circumstance and the fun and the excitement of that game. And of course, the guy who is maybe part of the reason for all that excitement and maybe started bringing in this new wave of talent, Christian Yelich, the veteran, the most tenured player on this team, got the party going.
3-2, this is driven out to center. Back goes Buxton at the track, at the wall. Gone! Christian Yelich, his second blast of the season.
Lane Grindle's call. So Yelly homers on opening day and the home opener. A quick start for him. More about him coming up in the next segment. Also, one of the main highlights of that game was how the game ended, or almost ended anyway, with an incredible double play. We know the defense is going to be a calling card of this team over and over and over again, and it really showed in the ninth inning on Tuesday.
Now the pitch. Bouncer, right side. They'll go to second for one, and the return. Uribe covering it first.
The hardest double play to turn in baseball and the best voice to hear it from Bob Uecker. Back on the mic here these last two games on WTMJ. That was an epic double play. Bowers, it helps to have a left-handed first baseman. Throwing to second with Adames and his strong arm. It was a little low, but what a dig and a fall by Uribe to get a key double play in a one-run game. Brewers win the home opener 3-2. Now, of course, they lost Wednesday's game, but there still were some highlights in there. Of course, the newest slugger putting his name into the tallies at home.
Bottom of the fourth inning, Rhys Hoskins sends a shot out to left, inside the pole and gone. Hoskins with his second home run as a Brewer and his first here in front of the home crowd at American Family Field. 2-0 Milwaukee.
Lane's call once again. Also, of course, there's going to be some more defense in this game.
Milner's first pitch to Margot is bunted in the air on a one hop, picked up by Ortiz. Throw to first, not in time. Margot runs too well, and he beat it out. Boy, that was a tremendous play by Ortiz. It was bunted in the air. It died right in front of Ortiz. He picked it quickly.
He made a heck of a play, and after review, he actually did get him. I was telling an evaluator the other day during spring training, right when things were ending there in spring training, you know, you guys are good at defense. You know, who's the best defender on the Brewers? Is it Terang? Is it Adames? And I said, no, it might be Joey Ortiz, and he showed why there on Wednesday with that epic quick flip to get Margot on a weird play. I mean, it almost caught him by surprise. I think any other third baseman, Margot looks like a genius and it's a base hit. But because it's Joey Ortiz, that was one incredible play. But the real story, of course, the Brewers lost, I know. But Wednesday's big headline, the kid, Jackson Chourio. I shouldn't say the kid. I want to take that back, actually. There's already a kid. But we got to come up with something for Jackson, right? Maybe the Nino. I mean, that's already taken too. So I got to think of something for Jackson to call him. Nonetheless, Churio connected for his first big league homer. And who better to have on the mic for your first big league homer than Bob Uecker?
Ready to work. Here it is. Line to right center. Major leaguer.
He becomes the youngest player since Juan Soto to hit a big league home run back in 2018. He's also started his career with a 5-game hitting streak. The Brewers' record is 7, which was tied last year by Joey Weimer, and it was set by BJ Surhoff back in 1987. So we'll keep an eye on that throughout the weekend. We're just getting started here on WTMJ for Brewers Weekly. We're going all the way to 9 o'clock here tonight. Stay with us. 855-616-1620. Again, 855-616-1620 if you want to join us here on the Talk and Text line. We're going to talk some sustainability, that is, for the offense. Stay with us, WTMJ.
Back with more Brewers Weekly after this. Get the more. Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Welcome back. Dominic Catronio with you. Brewers Weekly, our first in-season edition of Brewers Weekly. A 4-1 start, off day today, and then it's time to hit the ground running. The Brewers will have 39 games over the next 41 days. 13 in a row, off day. 13 in a row, off day. 13 in a row. So this is going to be a big test for the pitching staff. More on them in just a little bit. But the offense has certainly been part of the story and the main story so far this season for the Brewers. I've got 5 topics here, and I want you to listen along and think to yourself, is this sustainable? Now, I like to think that there is a few of these that have to be sustainable, and a few of these that are maybe this is getting a little too ahead of ourselves here, Dom. It is just 5 games into the season. I don't blame you, but look, we're just trying to come up with stuff here. We're being sensible people here. We're not trying to say plan the parade right now. We're not saying that, but I'm just trying to go through some of these numbers and figure out what's going on. And first and foremost, is this sustainable? The Brewers leading the league in stolen bases. They're 11-for-12 to start the year. They're up there with the Cincinnati Reds, who also have stolen 11 bases. The Nats are a perfect 10-for-10 still. Is that sustainable? I think it is sustainable. I don't know if they will lead the league at the end of the year, though. But then I started to think about it. Well, Garrett Mitchell will be coming back. He's plenty of speed and somebody that's a stolen base threat, too. Maybe that gives an opportunity for more steals for Bryce and for Sal, for Jackson, for Yelly. I could certainly see it happening. Now, the Reds, their philosophy is run. Just go run. Same thing as last year. So I think the Reds might get more attempts than the Brewers and thus maybe have a higher stolen base tally. But I see the Brewers having a better rate than them at the season's end. But I still think that is certainly sustainable. They'll be in the top 3, I imagine, by the end of the season if things continue the way they have started this year. Is it sustainable that their bases-loaded woes have been such a weird start to the season? They're just 2-for-8 with the bases loaded this year. Just a pair of singles. Of course, we've seen Reese ground into 2 double plays this year. Haven't been doing much. Of course, this is not sustainable. They will get back on track with stolen bases, or rather with the bases loaded, driving more runs, get some more damage in those scenarios. Already I'm seeing some folks getting a little frustrated about their approach with runners in scoring position. I remind you, first of all, 5 games, and I know I'm going to say that a lot, but when I look at the total numbers on the season and compare to the rest of the league, the Brewers are hitting .304 with runners in scoring position, and yet you still feel like they've left so much out there, right? Because of the double plays, of course. So let it breathe with bases loaded in particular. I love the fact that they are giving themselves a ton of opportunities with runners in scoring position to start the season. So I think that's going to shift back into the right direction here shortly. My third question, is this sustainable? Can the team weighted runs created plus, the WRC plus, remain over 100, meaning they're above league average for the entire season? Let me just read you the last 3 years. Last year, their WRC plus was 92. In 2022, when they missed the playoffs, it was 103. And in 2021, when they made the playoffs, it was 93. So kind of an alternate year pace here. And right now it's 104, again, five games into the year. I think this is absolutely sustainable and quite frankly should be a goal. Again, if you're not familiar with WRC+, 100 is league average as an offensive output. There's a lot that goes into it, but basically in layman's terms, WRC Plus basically says, are you an above or below average offense as an entire unit? And if you're above 100, that's a good thing. If you're below 100, that's a bad thing. I think the Brewers can certainly be sustainable over 100. Reese will get going. He's already got two homers. But you have to think, as he continues to get his baseball eyes back and his body back and his routine back into order, he will keep going. When Garrett Mitchell comes back, when they get more ABs for him, when Jackson Churio continues to get more comfortable in the big leagues, these are things that I say, yes, the WRC Plus is going to improve year over year. Number four out of five here, is this sustainable? Can Christian Yelich, stay with me here, this is a little talk radio-y, this isn't like me what I'm about to say. Can Christian Yelich turn in a 30-30 season? Now, he hasn't. He's only done it once in his career, and it was 2019. I see the stolen base environment. I see 30 stolen bases being a real possibility for him. 30 homers, I know he's already got two, is going to be a little tougher. However, from what we've seen early, I'll get into him with some StatCast notes here a little bit later in the show. There's reason to believe in this version of Christian Yelich. However, he's got seven hits. Five of them are singles. Two of them are homers. So no doubles yet this season. He's already 2-for-2 in stolen bases. Last year, he finished with 28 stolen bases in the improved environment for steals. You have to feel the Brewers are going to be more aggressive with him on the bases. Granted, one thing that could hold him back is where he's hitting in the lineup. Yelich's hitting third, not necessarily. You know, you don't want to be running into outs ahead of your cleanup hitter with Rhys Hoskins. You may get very few opportunities to steal bags. I would like to modify this to say maybe let's identify a 2020 first, because last year he came one home run shy of a 2020 season, 19 homers, 28 stolen bases. If we can see a 2020, then let's improve it to 25-25 and go from there. But I think 30-30 is not sustainable for Christian Yelich, though I would love to see it. And finally, my last offensive note, is this sustainable? Jackson Churio. Now, war early in the year is not something you want to look at. It's already a 0.4 B war, which is very good. For a full season, can Jackson Churio turn in 2.5 wins above replacement, a 2.5 B war, baseball reference war? That's a really tough ask, especially when you think about the fact that Ryan Braun in 2007 only had a 2.0, two wins above replacement. But then you remember, Braun only played 113 games that season. It's a counting stat. The more games you play, the more opportunity you have to increase your war. So my thought is, well, if Jackson, if everything goes according to plan, and he plays 140 games or so, 150 games, he should blow past Ryan Braun at 2.0 with the start that he's off to. To say that he's going to get above 3, I think, is a tall ask. Only four Brewers have ever done that, get above 3 in their rookie season. Excuse me, five Brewers have ever got above a 3 war in their rookie season. They're Wayne Comer in 1969, so the Seattle Pilots days. You've got Daryl Porter in 1973. He was third in Rookie of the Year voting that year. You've got Pat Listach, of course, Rookie of the Year in 1992. He has the best rookie season in Brewers history by war standards. He only hit one homer, but he stole 54 bags, so that certainly helped while hitting 290 in 1992. You've also got Scott Podsednik. Podsednik was second in Rookie of the Year voting in 2003 with a 3.6 B war. And finally, Nori Aoki had a 3.2 B war in 2012. But of course, that's a little bit of an asterisk given he was already a professional in 2012. So that's just something I'm going to monitor. I'm going to say it's sustainable, but monitoring depending on his tally of games. And we also, you remember with Daryl Porter having a 3.6 BWAR, that was only in 117 games as well, because he hit 16 homers in that season, hit 19 doubles. It was very impressive to do what he did in 1973. But that's my thoughts with the offense. What do you think? 855-616-1620. Again, 855-616-1620 if you want to join us. Let's switch this and talk about the pitching. There's a lot of questions about the pitching. Six-man rotation, bullpen use, how's Trevor McGill doing? All of those updates coming up next, right here in your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
More Brewers Weekly coming up on WTMJ. It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
We're going to continue with this little game that we're playing here on Brewers Weekly. I'm Dominic Cotroneo. 855-616-1620. You can tweet me as well, Dom_Cotroneo during the show. Let's continue on sustainability questions with the pitching staff. And I think these are the main questions that a lot of folks want answered right now. First and foremost, Yoel Piamps. Same pace as last year. He pitched in 69 games a season ago, which was a career high. This cannot be sustainable in my eyes. Here's why. The Brewers were very honest when I asked about it in spring training this year, about Yoel's end of the year last year in September. Obviously didn't go according to plan. His velo was down. His release point was down. But let's also be real. Let's be humans for a second here. It was the most he's ever pitched in his life. Ever. 69 games, 70 innings, almost all of them high leverage. That's going to wear on somebody that isn't the closer, okay? I think already this year, going to have to keep an eye on it. Now, I'm not blaming everything on him from Wednesday. His velo was down, though, and that should already sound some alarm bells, in my opinion. It was a back-to-back. I understood what Pat Murphy was trying to do in that situation. This was the moment of the game. You wanted your best available that wasn't your closer, right? You wanted your number two reliever in that spot against that portion of the order. The downside, though, was the fact that that portion of the order had saw him the previous day, and we saw them benefit from that on Wednesday as he gave up the lead, and then, of course, Bryce Wilson gave up the home run, and it was that was all she wrote. But I understood Pat Murphy's move, and it backfired. It happens. But Yoel Piamps, if he pitches close to 70 games again this year, I'm worried. I would be very, very worried about that. And it's another reason why the starting pitchers need to have depth, but it's not just a pitching issue. It's an offense issue. Get some more runs for these guys so they can just coast and they can give these guys a day off. So let's just keep an eye on Yoel Piamps. I do not want him to be on the same pace as he was last season, especially with his velo already down on Wednesday. Next up, Elvis Piguero. A 0.25 whip. Is that sustainable? Of course it's not sustainable. But I do want to take a moment to talk about Elvis. He's going to be, in my opinion, this year's unsung hero. And here's why I think that. Bryce Wilson was that last year, the bullpen saver, right? Being able to go multiple innings. Elvis Piguero has already shown in his two outings this year that he can go multiple innings. Furthermore, he can keep the ball out of danger, just one walk. And of course, that one walk came around to score on Wednesday. But what I mean by that is Elvis can do a multitude of things. He can get that right-on-right situation with that sinker, and I'll have some eye-popping numbers in the StatCast segment about his sinker. But he can give you two innings like we've seen him do already so far this season. He might pitch again tomorrow or on Saturday next. The ball is a ground ball machine with that sinker. It's two pitches. He keeps it simple. Sinker, slider. And the ball is almost always on the ground. I feel very confident with Elvis Piguero. He is my pick already, five games in, to be the unsung hero of this bullpen. He can pitch the seventh if needed. He can pitch the eighth if needed. He can pitch the fourth if needed. He is going to do everything for this bullpen this year as they wait for Devin Williams to return. So keep an eye out for him. Of course, a 0.25 whip is not sustainable, but I still think he is one of my picks to click, one of my major pieces of this 2024 season for the Brewers. Up next on the pitching staff sustainability, having only one starter pitch past the fifth inning. Of course, that's not sustainable. This week, I imagine the Brewers are going to shift to a six-man rotation. Wade Miley's going to make a rehab start down in Nashville at some point this week, and that would assuming he bounces back from that okay, slot him back into the rotation, likely in Cincinnati, maybe Baltimore. But that's to be determined. What I think about with this rotation, as Freddie is getting the ball tomorrow against the Mariners, and then you do the same rotation you had, Freddie tomorrow, DL Hall on Saturday, Colin Ray on Sunday. Monday you would give it to Jacob Junis, assuming everything's okay with the shoulder, since he only threw 47 pitches. Granted, this is a natural progression, right? He threw 35 pitches in a bullpen session in New York. He threw 47 pitches in his home opener debut on Tuesday. I imagine the next one's maybe going to be in the 70 range, somewhere in there. So let him continue to build back up after the faulty shoulder at the end of spring training. Then you'll have Joe Ross on Tuesday again, so he'll be back on normal rest. And hopefully, if Wade Miley does pitch this weekend somewhere, that Wade would slot in there next. Or if Wade's not ready, do you call on a spot start from a Jansen Junk or an Aaron Ashby? That's the question to be had. And then when that spot comes back around in the rotation, Wade would hopefully be ready to go in that spot, which would ideally be the following week in that following homestand, which would be, as I'm pulling up the schedule here now, that following homestand against the Padres. And then they go right back on the road for the Cardinals and the Pirates. So they don't have another off day until 2 weeks from today. They need to go to a six-man rotation, especially if Freddie Peralta is going to be the only guy giving you length. Next up, speaking of Freddie, can Freddie Peralta throw 200 innings this season? I think not only is that sustainable, it might be necessary. We talked about it with him during spring training, that there are these plateaus, right? These marks for pitchers to reach to, right? 200 innings, 200 strikeouts is something that everybody strives to. He threw 165 innings last season, making 30 starts. All-star break kind of interrupted things. Now, if he, you figure generally the opening day starter is going to get 32, 33 starts or so, 34 if they get creative with off days and that sort of thing toward the end of the year. And maybe if you're in a playoff run, you're going to start to taper him down at the end. But 165 and two-thirds innings last season, he had only 78 innings due to all the injuries he sustained in 2022. And remember, he missed a couple of starts in 2021 as well, and he only threw 144 innings. And shoot, if he had thrown another 20 innings, made another three or four starts in that one, that season, the Brewers certainly could have had an opportunity to have three guys in the top six of AL Cy Young voting, or NL Cy Young voting. But six innings in his first start, if they are going to be in a six-man rotation, all the more reason to let Freddie go long, right? To let Freddie get it, because he's going to get that extra day of rest. I'm not saying you're expecting Freddie to go six every time, but honestly, I think Brewers fans feel the same about what I'm about to say here. I would trade Freddie going for seven innings and maybe having five strikeouts for a five-inning, 10-strikeout game, because that's what the team needs. And I'm not telling Freddie to change anything about him. His stuff's nasty. He can't help it if guys are swinging and missing all the time. I'm fine with that. But in the long run, of course you want to see your guy throw seven innings every single time he can, especially the guy that's going to be leading your staff this year. So I think 200 innings is sustainable. It may not be a goal given everything the Brewers are going through with their pitching staff right now, but it might be required. They might need that one guy to get to 200 innings, and I would hope it's Freddie Peralta. All right, my last question on sustainable pitching. Abner Uribe holding down the closer role. After we learned this week, you know, we've all kind of kicked the tires, if you will. Okay, well, maybe it'll be McGill. Maybe it'll be Pyomps. Definitely should be Uribe at some point. Well, now it's pretty clear. It's going to be Uribe. After Pyomps struggled on Wednesday, McGill with a scary situation, in case you weren't familiar, Trevor McGill is on the 7-day concussion IL because he sustained a concussion after fainting on the Monday off day when he was in a Spectrum store, I guess, just, you know, getting his home internet set up or something like that. And scary because he had food poisoning over the weekend in New York. Malnourished, you know, lightheaded, faints in the store, hits his head. I mean, he's all 6'8". That's a lot to go down. We will learn more of his status hopefully this weekend, but he wasn't at the ballpark at all these last 2 days. McGill, I would hope, is going to make a full recovery, but obviously he's going to need a little bit of a ramp up on the back end of this as well, which means Abner is going to be your closer. Certainly sustainable. He's 3-for-3 already. I just want to keep an eye on the command. I want to make sure the walks don't creep up. And I want to warn folks something about Abner as well. Abner, I know he throws 100 miles an hour. He's still learning to get strikeouts. Abner is so early in this, guys. He is so young and inexperienced, quite frankly, not just in Major League Baseball, in professional baseball, period. 23 innings in 2023 in the minors, 30 innings in the big leagues. So that's 53 innings. 3 innings of double-A ball before his season was cut short. Then, of course, he pitched in the Arizona Fall League. 33 innings in A-ball in 2021, so that's 36 right there. Add that to the 53 we already have. That's 89. 9 innings in rookie ball in Arizona. So what does that bring us to? That brings us to 98. 19 innings in the Dominican Summer League. So let's go ahead and make that 117 in the 3 innings this year. 120 career professional innings. A lot of his strikeouts in the minors is just because those guys have never seen velo like that before. 41 strikeouts in AA and AAA in 23 innings. That's great stuff. It came back down to earth a little bit in the big leagues. 39 strikeouts in 30 innings, but 20 walks. That's the thing I want to keep an eye on. Let's keep the walks down. I don't need a million strikeouts. I'd love them, but I don't need a million strikeouts for Abner Ribeiro. I have full confidence in him being the closer for the Brewers until Devin Williams comes back. And I also want to put my foot down very clearly here on April 4th. When Devin Williams returns, assuming it's all healthy and all things are good, Devin Williams is your closer. Point blank. No questions. End of story. Devin will be the closer. Abner will have the eighth. Okay? Let's not even entertain that. Let's just squash that if you see anybody suggest that right now. All right, let's take a break. I want to talk about Bryce Turang coming up next. Encouraging signs from his first week of games. Some numbers to back that up as well. Stay with us. This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Catch more Brewers Weekly coming up on WTMJ. This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Welcome back. Let's talk a little second base, talk a little Bryce Turang. I'm Dominic Catronio. This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ, 855-616-1620. Again, 855-616-1620 is the number to call or text into. Let's get to the phone lines now. Let's get to James on the south side. James, you're live on Brewers Weekly.
Yes, you got Cherio for, what, 10 years? A guy that's going to be in center field, right?
Yeah, center or right field. I want him in right now.
Do you feel that he's going to be with us for that whole 10 years, or do you think maybe about 5 years and he'll be shipped off to some other team?
Absolutely not. No, that's the whole... Sorry, James. I want to squash this ASAP. The whole point of signing Cherio to that deal was to not ship him off come time. And it's backloaded that if he's performing in those final 2 years of that player options, 8 years guaranteed, 2 more on the back end that are team options, that he will still be paid handsomely for the market rate, and even better than the market rate, quite frankly, of what the baseball landscape could look like in 10 years or so, and if what he becomes what he's going to become. I do not see the Brewers trading this kid for what he's worth, what he's able to do, and what kind of the tools that he has at his disposal. I'm just so giddy to watch. But yes, go buy a Jackson Cherio jersey. You're going to see him for a very long time. Thanks for the call, James. Let's roll on here with Bryce Turang in this segment, though. I had a great conversation with Bryce, and it worked out perfectly because Wednesday he had a 12-pitch battle for fighting off his two-strike approach this year. And again, the quantum leap quote got some play during spring training, and that he's the starting second baseman. I mean, we're already starting to see that quantum leap, not just because he's 6-for-6 in stolen bases, but I've already seen a change in his approach. And the two-strike hitting is something I'm already very impressed with. Last year, he only hit 169 with two strikes. And again, you're not going to have a good batting average with two strikes. That's just the way it goes. He's over 300 right now, but again, it's 5 games in. I'm not going to get ahead of myself. But 4 of his hits this season have come with two strikes. And let me give you his strikeouts by pitch total per at-bat. Okay, he struck out 5 times this year. Here's a pitch total for each strikeout. 6, 9, 4-3-12. So he's got three strikeouts that are at least five pitches or longer for the at-bat. And talk to him about his two-strike approach this week in the clubhouse. He was just trying to get back to what he was so good at in the minor leagues. It's okay to have a 20% strikeout rate. That's league average. That's better than league average, actually. But he was always a guy that was an annoying at-bat in his own words. And he was able to put bat on ball in the minor leagues. And he just got away from that. He got out of himself in 2023 last season. So if he can become that guy again this year, make it an even harder out. And you look at the double he hit in the home opener, right? That was an excuse me swing. Up and out, close enough, you have to swing at it. And he gets enough barrel on it for it to carry down a left field line with some slice, and you get a double and you get an RBI out of it. He's at this point in his career where he's saying, I needed to make the change, and he's hoping that the strength that he put on is able to aid to that. If he's able to put bat to ball, combine that with the 15 pounds of muscle that he put on this offseason, there is going to be naturally more damage. He doesn't need to hit 20 homers on this team to be successful. Would I like Homer? Sure. I'd rather him hit 30 doubles, 5 triples, and steal 40 bags. I think that's his role on this team. And part of that will be avoiding strikeouts and putting bat to ball. We know he's going to give you gold glove defense. That's a given. We've already seen some incredible plays from him. But Bryce Terang, to take a quantum leap, in my eyes, it's going to be monitoring that two-strike approach and seeing if that sticks all season long. If he doesn't get too big, if he doesn't try to, you know, hit for homers, there'll be times that he hits for homers. If he gets out in front of a fastball, he's on time for it, boom, home run, just like the Grand Slam last year. But I'm believing in his approach and what I'm seeing and what we've seen in this first week from Bryce Terang. So if you're selling that Bryce Terang stock, borrowing a phrase from our friend Grant over in Madison, I'll buy up all that stock if you're selling it. I believe in the quantum leap. I think it's going to be a great year for him. Took a quick breather, come back with more. I got some StatCast stuff I want to talk about with you. Let me be a nerd with you. Stay with us here on WTMJ.
Back with more Brewers Weekly after this.
Visit
Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
It's not a Brewers Weekly if I'm not going long on my segments, but let's keep on going here. I'm Dominic Catronio. StatCast. Now, I want to take a moment, self-shameless plug here. I've got a Brewers-centric YouTube page as well, separate from WTMJ here. It's just Dom Brewers WTMJ. That's all you got to search on YouTube. And I dropped an exceptionally nerdy video. Now, you all know I'm a nerd, okay? We've been over this plenty of times. 30 minutes of me being really a nerd, and the response on it was pretty good, so I might make it some more this season. We're basically, I want to take people into my process of what I'm looking things up, and you can see my screen, I'm explaining things as I go, and stuff like that. So some of the main pieces of it, and in the teaser I shared this too, Freddie Peralta's fastball carry has been elite to start the season. I'll lead you to the video to watch that to explain it, because it's a little tough for me to explain it over radio without a visual medium, of course, but basically, we have a way to measure how a fastball is able to ride. You know, you talk to hitters and that the hardest fastballs to hit appear to rise. And that's what a ride, you know, carrying, holding its line higher than batters expect. So we have great numbers on Freddie Peralta. I mean, 15 is average for the number that we're looking for. He was popping 19s and 20s in there in that game on opening day against the Mets. So we're going to monitor that throughout the season. Another thing, a guy I've already mentioned in the show, Elvis Piguero, his sinker is moving on average fourth most in baseball. Almost 2 feet of horizontal break so far this year on his sinker, one of the best sinkers in baseball. So we will continue to monitor that. He's averaging 21 inches of horizontal movement on his sinker so far this season. That's ridiculous. Christian Yelich, Woba. Are you familiar with Woba? You should be. Woba, ye wombo, wombo. Anyway, it's a SpongeBob reference for the youths listening. But his WOBA, weighted on base average, you know, it's kind of a more advanced OPS, if you will. Higher the better. Think of it like batting average. Well, of course, it's five games, but his WOBA is 525, and his ex-WOBA, which StatCast measures by saying with an X, whenever we see an X, remember, that means what we expect you to do based on your quality of contact, how hard you're hitting the ball. His ex-WOBA is right there, too, so he's not been getting lucky. A 5'11 ex-WOBA. Remember, he's played in the cold, he's played in the wind, and he'll continue to play at home. So a pair of home runs certainly helps. He continues to hit the ball hard. Sign me up for a Christian Yelich bounce back, return, resurgence season as the veteran of this team. Also, Yelly, great swag so far this first week. The outfits have been solid. Some good pea coats, saw him through the subway, and some good stuff so far. Going to monitor some of the fashion stuff this season for you as well. He's making a run at maybe Willy Adames. He's one of the more fashionable guys on the team. I would say it's Willy, Devin, Peguero, Yelly. They're the first guys that come to mind for fashionable. Okay. All right. That's not StatCast, but maybe, outfits above average as opposed to outs. That could be something we keep track of this year, too. So I encourage you to go check it out on YouTube, Dom Brewers WTMJ. I nerded out for 30 minutes. Let me know if you enjoyed it, and maybe I'll make some more coming up this season. Let me take our last break, and I want to make a heartfelt speech here for the city of Oakland and the Coliseum. Some tough news today and some big baseball news. Get on that on the other side of this break on WTMJ.
More Brewers Weekly coming up on WTMJ. It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
All right, last few minutes of the show here. We've got about 3 minutes here. And, you know, it was a really weird day for baseball fans in Northern California, the Bay Area, East Bay, as what's long been rumored became official today that this is the final season at the Coliseum. I withhold your takes for a moment on what you think about the Coliseum and what you think about its possums and its issues and Mount Davis. Because, look, we can fill a whole series of podcasts about what's gone wrong at the Coliseum. But I'm sitting here at my home in Arizona right now because I'm here for a wedding this weekend. But here on my desk, I have a lanyard that says, "Rooted in Oakland." You know, this was part of the slogan that this team made for the, you know, process to build a ballpark in downtown Oakland in Jack London Square, Howard Terminal, and just add it to the list of failed stadiums for one of the best fan bases in baseball. And now, today, it was announced that the A's will spend the next 3 seasons after this year in Sacramento at Sutter Health Ballpark, the home of the Sacramento Rivercats, AAA affiliate of the Giants. It used to be a AAA affiliate of the Oakland A's, as Sacramento is trying to court Major League Baseball to get an expansion franchise. They would play there for 3 years, and then, in theory, the Vegas ballpark would be complete, and they move to Vegas in 2028. This sucks, man. This straight-up sucks. For those who aren't familiar, if you weren't listening last season, my dad works for the Oakland A's. I grew up loving the Oakland A's, and I've been grateful now, as I turn 30 this year, to look back at some of my young years with the Oakland A's and spending time at the Coliseum and enjoying every second of the people there. And this move impacts people. Okay, I'm going to miss the Coliseum, but there's going to be layoffs with this. There's going to be challenging times for the next 3 years for the players, for the staff, and for the fans. And that's the last person thought of in all this, the fans. So I'm really bummed for the city of Oakland to now have lost all three of their teams, the Warriors, the Raiders, and now the A's. And if you're saying, "Dom, but the Warriors didn't really..." Yes, they went to San Francisco. And if you talk to anybody from the East Bay, there is a massive difference between Oakland and San Francisco. So my heart goes out to everybody in Oakland. I hope you can be a fan however you want. If you don't want to show up after what's gone down with John Fisher and everything that's happened, I don't blame you. But I know I will be at the Coliseum in August when the Brewers are there. It will be my goodbye to the Coliseum. I have seen some incredible moments in that ballpark. That ballpark has seen some incredible moments. In 2018, the A's did a great piece on their 50th anniversary team. It's on YouTube. I really encourage you to go check that out. So, from the bottom of my heart, Oakland, I love you guys. I love the East Bay, and I'll see you guys in August. But yeah, really weird, tough day for baseball fans out there. I hate to end the show on a somber note like that, but I just had to get it off my chest. That's going to do it for this week's Brewers Weekly. I'm back with a post-game show tomorrow after the Mariners game. For Max Meyerson, our producer, I'm Dominic Catronio. Until next time, keep on swinging.